Hey everybody, this is Steve Maxwell, and this is the first of what will be many podcasts that we're going to do. And as a result, we should kind of identify this as December 7th, 2013, the first podcast, and the first podcast topic will be Billy Gladstone. And why are we suggesting Billy Gladstone? I guess for a lot of different reasons. Billy was a phenomenally talented drummer at Radio City Music Hall primarily, in the 30s through the 40s, but he was also an incredible inventor, and he invented many, many different things, but the most significant things he invented were things relating to the drum set, specifically the snare drum, and Billy did an incredible job of building drums that were very innovative and way ahead of their time. Billy was a tremendous, tremendous thinker, tremendous inventor, as we said, fabulous player, and he was always looking for ideas that made things easier for drummers. He worked in Radio City Music Hall, and one of the things that was interesting about Radio City was that the orchestra pit was a couple of basement levels below the stage area. And this is back in the days when there were no plastic heads, so all there was calf. And any of you who have ever worked with calf heads know that the calf heads will be very, very impacted by humidity. So, the temperature and the humidity being what they are, if you come from a sub-basement level where it might be very moist and damp, up to a stage level where it may be very dry, those calf heads are going to go out of whack on you, and it's going to be an absolute nightmare, especially when you've got calf heads on the top and the bottom of your snare drum. And Billy was primarily playing snare drum at Radio City Music Hall. So he came up with an invention, an ingenious one. It's called a three-way tuning system. And in that three-way tuning system, Billy took the principles behind a skate key, basically, and created a lug that allowed you to tune the entire drum from the top without turning the drum over. He thought, number one, it was unsightly to turn the drum over once you reach the stage level to tune it. It didn't look right. He was very concerned about how things looked. And it was also a pain, to be brutally honest. So what he invented was very unique. The particular lug design that he invented allowed you to tune the top head from the top, the bottom head from the top, and move the top and bottom heads in unison together. He achieved this by having a three-way tuning key, and the tension rods at the top of the drum, they were twofold. One was a square rod, just like a normal drum key tuning rod today, and there was one part of the key that locked onto that small rod, and by turning that, it tightened the bottom head. Now, there was another nut right underneath that one on the top that was hex-shaped. There was another slot on the key that was hex-shaped, that locked down onto that particular nut, again, on the top, and then by turning that, you tuned the top head. And then the coolest part of all is that once you had the top and bottom heads at the proper tension between each other, you had a third portion of the key that locked down on the small nut and the large nut together and moved those top heads in unison to change the pitch, but to still keep the relative tension differences that you had between the top and the bottom. Really ingenious. Now you look at that and you say, well, why do I need that today? Well, I'll tell you why you might want to use that today. You would use that today in a recording studio where time is money. And if you've got a perfect balance between the top and bottom head, but all of a sudden the producer says, I want that big fat Al Green sound on the record. Well, all you got to do is lock onto the top and bottom together and tune the entire drum down without losing the tension differences that you had between the top and the bottom head. It's remarkable, absolutely incredible, and it's very ingenious. Of course, nobody's building drums like that today because those lugs are very expensive to make, but nonetheless, it was very ingenious at the time. He also created a tremendously simple snare strainer, and, you know, snare strainer should do one thing. It should take the snares off and on easily and allow you to adjust them with a knob, and that's what you really need from a snare strainer. You can get overcomplicated with it. You can get oversized with it, and you really don't need to. So he designed a very simple throw-off that threw off away from the shell, back on with a simple tension knob that was great. He also developed an internal muffler. And the internal muffler that he used was a muffler that allowed you, had a little dial on the side with numbers on it. So you could dial up the right amount of muffling on the head to take some of the overtones and the rings out, and the ring out. And that's an ingenious idea. People don't use tone controls much today, but I think you're missing the boat when you don't use them, because the reality is it's very, very easy for you to dial in a little bit of muffling when you need it by using something like this. And it was a very simple design with a lever that moved two little pads up that could just barely touch the top head from underneath to take a little bit of the overtones and the ring out, or you could press it up harder to take a great deal more of it out. Very, very ingenious. He also came up with a tremendous little idea for venting the drum. Over on the by the butt plate on an original Gladstone drum, you'll see a little knob. If you turn that knob, there is another little knob behind it, or a little plate behind it, that has little holes in it. And you move those little holes, it's almost like opening up a salt shaker. And that opens up little vent holes. It allows you to basically adjust the degree of venting that the drum has. Above and beyond all of this, Billy used very, very thin resonant shells. His shells were 3-ply shells sourced from Gretsch. So these were Gretsch shells. 3-ply shells, no reinforcement rings, and they are wonderfully musical shells, but Billy took it one step further. He also took and lacquered the interior of the shell so that it would create a more resonant sound chamber, and it really does work. Now, for the exterior of the drums, Billy would always, generally, for the vast majority of the drums he built, use just a lacquer. So a black lacquer is what most of his drums were built with, although he did make a few drums with pearl wraps, and he did make some drums that were natural bird's eye maple. Only 4 drums with bird's eye and gold hardware were made. There were a few other bird's eye drums made with chrome hardware, but the majority of Billy's drums that he built were black lacquer with chrome hardware. Now, what's so special about Billy Gladstone's drums? Billy built approximately 50 snare drums in his lifetime, and these are the most highly prized drums pretty much for any collector or player in the world today. They are incredible. I have played many examples, and I guess I feel somewhat qualified to talk about these because I have brokered the sale of now 8 of these snare drums, and there are only 25 of the original 50 drums that still exist. I brokered the sale of 8 of those already. As of this recording, I am in the process of brokering one more, and we'll have an additional one to broker before too long. So I've seen a lot of these. I have also brokered the sale of one of the original Billy Gladstone drum sets, which I'll get to in a minute. On the snare drums, Billy's drums were generally 7 inches deep by 14, 8 lug drums with 3-way tuning, and all of the features that I mentioned previously. They are superb drums, and they were highly sought after by orchestral percussionists because of the great sensitivity that they had. These drums generally would have been fitted with calf heads and either gut snares or cable snares, and they are tremendously, tremendously good drums. The sensitivity is remarkable, the articulation is remarkable, and Billy was a superb, masterful snare drummer with incredible technique. So he was a person who could really make those drums sing, and he knew what those drums needed to do. So these are highly prized by orchestral players, but I'll tell you, I've had some of these drums and put them behind a drum set, even with calf heads and gut snares, and I could use it as a drum set drum. They're remarkable. A Gladstone snare with plastic heads and regular wire snares is also a marvelous thing to play. I've done that with a couple of the drums, and it was just phenomenal as an instrument, just incredible. So with only 50 drums having been made, and only 25 roughly in existence now, these are very, very hard to come by. As I say, I've brokered the sale of many of these drums. A friend of mine, Chet Falzerano, who wrote the Gretsch book and wrote a masterful book about Billy Gladstone, which is on Center Stream Publications, and you definitely should pick up a copy of that book. Chet owns, I think he's got 6 original Gladstone snares, and the rest of the remaining known snares are in private collections, and there are a few drums that had belonged to the Navy band and the Army band that have gone missing and we think were destroyed. So essentially, of the 50 original drums, about 25 still exist. Some are still with their original owners. Most are in private collections, and they are highly prized collectibles. Extremely, extremely valuable instruments. Some were built for major artists. Louis Belson had one. Gene Krupa had one. Cozy Cole had one. And the interesting thing about the Cozy Cole snare drum, I'll take a sidestep here and talk about Gladstone and the drum sets that he made. Billy made 4 drum sets in his lifetime. They were all the same size, 9x13, 16x16, 14x22, and they had a snare drum. And generally they were going to be either a 6.5 or 7x14 snare drum. 7x14 was his pretty much standard size. He made 4 sets of drums. One set was Bird's Eye Maple, incredible. That must have been an incredible set to see in person. However, that set burned in a fire, so it's gone. There was another set that was built that was black lacquer that Billy had used in the Radio City Music Hall, but the bass drum from that set was destroyed in a flood. The snare drum had gone missing, so the 2 toms are left, so it's an incomplete set. There is a Silver Sparkle rap set, which belongs to my good friend Chet Falzerano, and that set had belonged to Billy's star pupil, a fellow by the name of Saul Leslie Bimel. And that set, again, is the 13-16-22 with the snare drum, and that belongs to Chet. The 4th set is a very interesting set. It was a White Marine Pearl wrapped set. It had a snare drum with it. The snare drum from that set went missing. The 13-16-22 and the snare drum was originally made for Benny Goodman and used by Maury Feld in the Goodman Band. That particular set came up for sale a number of years ago, traded hands with the wonderful, wonderful collector who was a mentor of mine, a fellow by the name of Charlie Donnelly in Newington, Connecticut. Had that drum set, had originally sold it to a good friend of mine, Bunny Carlos, back, I think in the very late 70s. And long story short, that drum set ended up getting sold from Bunny to my good friend Carl Palmer of Emerson, Lake & Palmer fame over in London. And over the course of time, that set also was paired with the Cozy Cole White Marine Pearl Gladstone snare drum that was made for Cozy personally by Billy. Recently, I brokered the sale of that set from Carl Palmer to another buyer that who shall remain nameless at the moment. So, and that was a truly, truly remarkable set and a very, very significant rarity. So, long story short, well, maybe it's not so short, but the point here is the drums that were made by Billy Gladstone are not only superb items from the perspective of a collector, but they're superb items from the perspective of a player. There really is nothing finer out there. And my advice would be, if this is the kind of thing that you like, if one comes along, don't hesitate to purchase it if you can afford it, because these are very few and far between. There will be no more. They are truly, truly outstanding, and there is nothing even remotely close to these being made today. They're just superb. So that's our little tidbit for the first podcast. A little bit of a background on Billy Gladstone and his wonderful drums. If you have any questions, of course, you can visit us on the web at maxwelldrums.com. And you can always contact me at vintagedrums@aol.com. Or you can call me on my cell, which is 630-865-6849. I'd love to hear from you. I hope you enjoyed this segment. Please call me or email me and let me know if you enjoyed the segment, and let us know what other topics you'd like us to discuss, and we'll be happy to do so. So thanks, everybody, and stay tuned. We'll have our next podcast for you shortly. Thanks.